Blog Talk Radio.
Honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Thank you for joining us. To check out our latest commentary, go to our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade talkradio.blogspot.com. So I would like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. Today's topics include remembering Steve Jobs. We're going to talk a little bit about Occupy Wall Street. Also, there's another GOP shakeup. Ron Paul wins the straw poll. And we will also be talking about the Alabama immigration law. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And also, we have a chat room open. So, whether you're listening via the internet or you want to call in, there are many ways to get involved. But first, let's take a look at our current events. First up, Steve Jobs. Now, it was a shock to me because in my world, Steve Jobs is like what musicians would consider a Michael Jackson. I mean, he's a legend in our time, so it was really, really sad to hear that he passed away. And, you know, I was really, really taken aback by the news that he had passed away. And I'm going to read for you what the Huffington Post had to say and what Apple said on their website about him passing. Now, Steve Jobs, Apple co-founder and former CEO, has died at the age of 56. Apple has posted this statement on their website. They say that Apple has lost a visionary and creative genius, and the world has lost an amazing human being. Those of us who have been fortunate enough to know and work with Steve have lost a dear friend and an inspiring mentor. Steve leaves behind a company that only he could have built, and his spirit will forever be the foundation of Apple. Also, there was a couple of different comments left out by the president. Here's what the president said. Michelle and I are saddened to hear of the passing of Steve Jobs. Steve was among the greatest of American innovators, brave enough to think differently, bold enough to believe he could change the world, and talented enough to do it. By building one of the planet's most successful companies, from his garage, he exemplified the spirit of American ingenuity. By making computers personal and putting the internet in our pockets, he made the information revolution, not only accessible, but intuitive and fun. And by turning his talents to storytelling, he has brought joy to millions of children and grown-ups alike. Steve was fond of saying that he lived every day like it was his last, because he did. He transformed our lives, redefined entire industries, and achieved one of the rarest feats in human history, He changed the way each of us sees the world. The world has lost a visionary, and there may be no greater tribute to Steve's success than the fact that much of the world learned of his passing on a device he invented. Michelle and I send our thoughts and prayers to Steve's wife, Laureen, his family, and all of those who loved him. You know, it was really sad for me because, again, this is the world that I live in, the world of technology, and to lose someone of this magnitude was really, really, really heart broken for me. So call in and tell us what your favorite Apple device or what Steve meant to you. We would love to hear from you today in remembrance, while we take this a moment to remember Steve and all the things that he brought to our lives. Also in the news, we're going to talk about what's going on Wall Street. Now, last week we kind of talked a little bit about it. We was kind of, Jim and I was kind of wondering why the media was so reluctant to begin to talk about what was happening on Wall Street. Now, if you remember back when the Tea Party first got started, they had small pockets of people. They were in a lot of cases making a lot of noise about, you know, about what was going on Wall Street. But they seem to have received a lot of attention, unlike the people that are occupying Wall Street. And so, and what we talked about last week, we kind of said that we felt like it was the beginning of something special, mainly because of what has happened across the globe with protests, right? You've seen what happened in Africa earlier this year. You've seen what happened across the world when they were overthrowing their dictators. And so now we're, the United States is really in a position to really cause change. And so I was saying that there was momentum starting to build. And, of course, now you're seeing more and more media starting to report on this. And the Reuters has an article on this very topic, and it's entitled "Insight: Occupy Wall Street: The Start of a New Protest Era." And it says, when Paul Friedman met the ragtop youth camped out near Wall Street to protest inequality in the American economy, he felt he was witnessing the start of a protest movement not seen in America since the 1960s. And Friedman should know, the 64-year-old was a student organizer during the anti-Vietnam War movement, protesting from 1964 for 11 years until the war ended. He also joined the civil rights action against racial segregation in America. On Wednesday, as thousands of union workers marched to show solidarity with a movement called Occupy Wall Street, he walked shoulder to shoulder with dreadlock college dropouts, unemployed youth, and students who for 3 weeks have camped out near Wall Street and who have no plans to leave. And I would like to get your comments on it. What do you think is happening here? Do you think this movement would catch fire? Do you believe this is the start of something that could potentially change the way that America businesses treat its people? I would love to get your comments on this as well. We also want to talk about what happened this week with Ron Paul. Now, the GOP has had another shakeup. Before, it was Mitt Romney, and then you had Rick Perry, who won all of the debates, began to take the lead. And then all of a sudden, over the last couple of weeks, we began to see Herman Cain pull in the front. He's now starting to gain that top tier. And so this week, Ron Paul wins a straw poll. And it was the Values Voter Summit. Now, there was an interesting article in the Christian Science Monitor that talks about this very thing. It says that at this weekend's Value Voter Summit, sponsored by the Family Research Council, the American Family Association, Jerry Falwell's Liberty University, and other like-minded organizations, you'd expect a strong social conservative, say like Michelle Bachmann or Rick Santorum, to do well in a mock election among Republican presidential hopefuls. But no, it was a libertarian, Ron Paul, who won the day, taking a relatively whopping 37% of the vote, way ahead of Michelle Bachmann, which had 8%, and Santorum, which had 16%, even besting current conservative favorite, Herman Cain. Now, Ron Paul, this is kind of interesting because Ron Paul, the man who says the federal government has no authority to regulate recreational drugs, prostitution, and same-sex marriage, who criticized the targeted killing of Al-Qaeda's Osama bin Laden and Anwar al-Awlaki. Now, this kind of thing has happened before at special interest gathering. For 2 years in a row now, Paul has won the Conservative Political Action Conference straw poll under these similar circumstances. What is going on in the GOP? Interesting. But yet, these and all of the other comments we will be talking about after the break. And I would love to get your comments. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to take your calls. We're going to hear from you. We're also going to be in the chat room and listening in on Twitter. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my... Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Joining me today to talk about this week's current events is, of course, my partner in crime and co-host and the executive producer of Current Events and the syndicated columnist of the Ask Jima blog. Jima, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Glad.
Now, first up, I want to talk about Steve Jobs. It was certainly a sad affair. What did Steve Jobs mean to you and the things that you do?
Well, here's the thing about it. I am a late bloomer as it relates to the world of technology. And so for me, once I realized, you know, all the things that I do on a daily basis and how he, you know, probably had something to do with it, I guess I didn't realize it because I'm such a latecomer to the world of technology. I mean, thanks to you and all that you know about it, you pretty much, I'm going to say forced me to be a little bit more like a techie, but you have inspired. How is that a better word?
Mm-hmm.
You've inspired me in the world of technology. So, but for me, I'm a late bloomer, so I don't really know, you know, the impact as much as you do because you've been in it from the beginning. But, you know, I know what I use every day. I'm on a computer every day. I'm on my phones every day, and I'm trying to navigate this thing we call the World Wide Web. And I think the access, the laptop, the convenience of technology has definitely made my life greater and has definitely increased my knowledge base. So for that, I would have to say thank you.
You know, what's interesting is that some of the things that we now consider to be commonplace, like the iPad or the iPod or, you know, those small devices that people have now, you know, they kind of run and jog with, is something that we couldn't have really foreseen before. I mean, we really had a notion of this is what technology is. We kind of put it in a box, right? And so let's go back to something as simple as the cassette player. You remember the cassette player or either the boom box back in the day, and you would put these, you know, the speakers, and people would walk around holding them. And then we kind of graduated to the Walkman. You remember the Walkman? How everybody had this little small cassette tape, and they had all of their nice songs on and things of the nature. And then we kind of graduated from that to the disc player, right? And so then we made this tremendous leap into these MP3 devices. And then all of a sudden now you can almost go from now carrying around a tape, you know, even the 8, if you go back as far as the 8-track, and we had a fixed set of songs that you can put on. Then you graduate to a cassette tape, which you can turn it over in the front and back, and then a disc seems like it could hold more. But when we graduated to the MP3 player and we moved to that smaller device called the iPod, it just changed the way people can now deal with music because you can put, you know, literally millions of songs on a device, on a small device. You can almost listen to music from now until you die, basically. And then, you know, that's just in the music space. And then when you talk about the technology space, the iPad, again, we had these big mainframe computers, and then everybody had these desktop computers. And then, ultimately, laptops are more commonplace. And then, all of a sudden, the reason why he's just so revolutionary is because he takes this great leap. Right, the great leap that he took the phone and then the computer with the iPad. I mean, so if you're in this kind of industry and you have a strong affinity for technology, you can really see how I have a strong appreciation for the leaps that he took when it comes to technology. And so that's kind of what he meant to me in my world and my industry because, of course, you know, I can definitely appreciate all of what he's brought to our industry. I also want to go ahead. You got a comment?
No, I was just gonna say, you know, when you lay it all out like that, and you really look at the technology in terms of where we started and where we are currently, only to know that there's probably something else on the horizon, and yet those are things that we were using, you know, and when we were using those. It was the latest and greatest. I mean, when you were able to listen to your music while you were walking down the street on that Walkman was like the biggest thing in the world, you know. And so how it revolutionized even how we work out, because then you started putting your favorite songs on a cassette and you were able to work out to what you wanted to listen to. So it is amazing how technology has grown over you know a relatively short period of time. So yeah, that was a good timeline there.
Right. It's okay. So I want to shift gears for a moment to talk about what's happening in the news that we kind of kind of introduced to the world last week, and it's been going on for quite some time, but the media has kind of been reluctant to talk about it. And that is what's happening on Wall Street. This whole thing, what they call the 99 percenters, or what they were saying is Occupy Wall Street movement. This protest, do you think, is finally beginning to take hold?
I think so because the media is finally deciding to talk about it, which is good. But I think because nationwide there's just been different sets of demonstrations around the country in different major cities. There was one here, I believe, a couple of days ago in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and there was some out in L.A. yesterday. And it's not just you know, young people who they wanted to, and the reason why I think the media was hesitant was because they couldn't really put their finger on what it was that was happening, and they couldn't find, quote-unquote, a spokesperson that spoke for what the people, you know, was out there protesting. But I think that was the beauty of it. You know, sometimes when you just, I think it's Nathan McCall's book that says, "It makes me want to holler." And, you know, sometimes this situation that you find yourself in life, everything coming at you, you just want to just go somewhere and do something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you had people that at the same time and at the same moment, I have to go do something. They didn't know what that something was. They didn't sit down and have a strategy meeting about it. Somebody, you know, probably said, "Let's go to Wall Street." And that's what they did. And because I think the first time we went was on a Saturday, and I remember seeing the jokes back and forth on Twitter, like, why are they occupying Wall Street on the weekend? Well, because somebody's going to notice it. And eventually they did. And so now you have people there all day. They've been in D.C., like I said, they've been out in L.A., they've been in New York, and it's causing some panic because what will be the response when the people, when more and more people start seeing it? When you looked at the things that happened this past summer over in Egypt and in different countries, you know, we probably only heard about it once it was the thousands of people. But I guarantee you those protests started out small. Mm-hmm. And it began to grow as people began to find out about it, and it continued to grow. And then all of a sudden, it is a massive demonstration of power because we do have power. We don't know it because we haven't exercised it in a while and because somebody somewhere has told us that we really don't. But we really do have power. Collectively, we could really change some things if we wanted to.
And that's the key point. The collective power that we have, and we have to sustain it for an extended period of time, right? Because the things that happen in a lot of cases when it comes to these type of protests, they kind of happen in short spurts, right? And if they happen in short spurts, then the government, either the businesses, have enough money so they can sustain themselves for a short period of time. But when the movements become extended, I'm talking about months, and I'm even talking about years, then the businesses can't sustain themselves that long without taking some action. And a good example is the Montgomery boycott, the bus movement that happened down in Alabama. And when you talk about that organization that started out, like you said, small, and it grew, and then they didn't have Twitter and Facebook and all of these social media outlets to be able to get the word out. So it took them a little bit longer to get the word out and to have people stick to their guns and maintain. But because they stood the test of time and they did it over the extended period of time, they were very successful. So the question is, do you think that the people that are occupying Wall Street will be able to extend or sustain themselves for an extended period of time?
I hope so. And I hope so because it's because of our lack of patience and what some have termed to be a microwave generation that we find ourselves in the situation that we're in now. When you look at Wall Street, the goal is to make money and to make it fast, to make it quickly. When you look at how people have lived their lives and what they invest in trying to become rich quick. And so it's that mentality that has landed us in some of the situations that we find ourselves in, and that we don't want to work too hard to get the things that will sustain us, so we'll rather take a shortcut. So hopefully we will recognize that those people in other countries that finally took a stand and waited it out, you know, those people waited it out. They wasn't in a hurry. They knew that if we stay here long enough, somebody's going to have to do something. And that's what we have to say. If we stay here long enough, somebody will have to do something. And like you stated with the Montgomery bus boycott, I mean, you know, those people walked in the rain, the snow, when it was 100 degrees outside. It didn't matter because they took a stand and said, we're not going to do this anymore. And our problem in today's society is that we cannot agree on what the top five things are we going to be marching for or what we're going to be protesting. And so because we can't agree, in my opinion, because of some of that lack of agreement, will have an impact on our lack of being able to sustain it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know.
So hopefully, you know, we'll come around, you know, and not get so caught up in the ideology of it, you know, but just really stick to making a change on some level.
Right. So you mentioned something earlier I want to ask you about, and we can kind of talk a little bit. We can kind of put a pin here for a second. And that is the Tea Party, not necessarily the Tea Party, but the protesters that are occupying Wall Street. You said that they didn't seem to have a unified approach, or they couldn't seem to agree on a particular instance of anything. And you said, in your opinion, you thought that was good. And so my question is that when the Tea Party started out this year, or not necessarily this year, but since President Obama has been in administration, I really didn't see them having a distinct message. Right? They talked about taxed enough already, but that has since morphed into something that's altogether different from what they started out. You know, I've seen a lot of protesters out there, and they called themselves the Tea Party, but they didn't have a unified vision. They didn't have a unified message at the time. They just, I mean, in my opinion, they just hated Obama, right? They just hated the president. And so when you look at the comparison that the media is doing to saying that the Tea Party had this type of unified message and the people that are occupying Wall Street don't have that, I tend to disagree. I think the Tea Party was more contrived. It was a contrived message as opposed to what the real people are feeling on Wall Street. What do you say to that?
Well, I say two things to that. I say you're right in your first assessment, in that they did have a general theme, and it was their complete hatred, dislike, discomfort with the President of the United States being African-American and sitting in the highest office in the world that everybody wants, the most powerful position in the world, everybody wants it. So I think that their rallying cry was about him. I don't care what they say on paper. I believe because if it wasn't about him, the rhetoric and the language and the tone wouldn't have been so nasty and so negative. And when they originally started their tax enough already, he hadn't even done anything yet. So what, he hadn't been in office long enough to do anything. And the time they really came out to the forefront was really around the whole health care debate. So some say that the Tea Party originally started when Bush was in office. And it may have, but I don't remember. I don't remember hearing anything about it. So it couldn't have had that great of an impact. And I think that, honestly, that maybe in the beginning it had some legitimate form, you know, reason to why it was formed. And I think it's been hijacked by a bunch of crazy people that have taken over what originally started out as some other sort of movement to now this extreme, you know, tendency to be extreme right of everything, and that a lot of their focus has been about the president. So I agree with you. I don't think they start. That wasn't what they started out with, in my opinion. They started out just that way, and that's what it has morphed itself into. You go back to those debates, around healthcare and all of the showing up at rallies with guns and weapons and the depictions of the president and the first family and all the negative and racial overtones one hears, not only from those protesters, but some of the people that have nationally syndicated radio shows. You know, so it's more, you know, that they came together out of one thing, and that was, we have got to get this man out of office. They, you know, that's my opinion. You know, we have got to make him look as bad as possible as soon as possible so we can take back over. So when they talk about taking their country back, that's what they're talking about.
Interesting. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Okay, so let's say that they don't have a message, the protesters on Wall Street. My question is to you is that if the media is supposed to be so liberal-based or so liberal-biased, with the exception of Fox News, of course, then why is it that the mainstream media, CBS, NBC, ABC, you know, all the CNN, all of those news stations or channels, when they seem to talk about the Wall Street protesters, they're being more almost painting them in a negative light as opposed to something that could potentially manifest into something good? And so my question is simply this. Why do you think, or why does it seem like to me that the media is not portraying these Wall Street protesters as something that could be potentially positive?
Because to do that, you know, then they have to admit that there's something wrong with Wall Street. And too many of them, and Wall Street puts out a lot of money for lobbyists around the, you know, to go out and do some of the things that they do to keep them, to keep their hands and their pockets full. And so we don't know who's sitting on the boards and who's the director of marketing and the director of news at these stations, but I guarantee you they've gotten a message from somebody to, you know, let's paint these people as young, immature, don't have a plan, just out there littering up New York, and that really don't know what they're talking about. Let's paint them to be, you know, let's make this be irrelevant. But what they've done is, because they've tried so hard to make it be irrelevant, they've made some people be like, well, now, wait a minute. That does make sense. And when you get nationals, when you got the national labor unions, you know, joining in, which to people like, you know, we really don't want we don't even want the president to be the face of this. This is our movement, you know. So whether or not these groups come along, that's fine, and we thank you for your support. But this is going to be for the people, by the people. We're going to energize this thing. And so they've made a point to try to keep it connected to any union or any one person, because they want to show the mass move of it. And I think the media just don't know what to do with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they covered the other countries, you know, daily, but you find it odd that here, right at home, well, because they know if too many people really get on board, we might have a situation.
Yeah.
We might have a situation that can't be contained, because your military ain't even in the States. They somewhere else. So who's going to come in and contain if people begin to riot in the streets like they've done in Egypt?
Not to mention, we don't the laws that really protect the people in the United States. So you can't, I mean, unlike the incident that happened the other day when they had these 700 people and they said they were breaking laws and took a lot of them to jail. But when you're talking about 7,000 or 700,000 or potentially 7 million people occupying a particular a geographical area, then that becomes a problem. Then we don't have the infrastructure in place to contain a situation like that. And so, unlike overseas, where they can actually kill and shoot their people and then just be done with it, right?
Right.
We don't have that type of tolerance for our law enforcement or our federal military to attack the regular people like that, you know, the, you know, everyday civilians. And so I tend to agree with you that the fact that if this thing really takes off, if it begins to get traction and the media has some culpability in it by spreading this positive news, then you're right, it could begin to be out of control. So the question becomes, if it reached that point, what do you think can potentially happen? I mean, what's the worst case or best case scenario if it takes hold?
Well, the worst thing, of course, is what you just stated, is that the police and military come in and begin to arrest people at random for whatever they think they can come up with at that moment, and began, as they did last week, you know, using pepper spray on people. And although these people have not had any weapons with them, they didn't have they weren't even marching. They was occupying a space. And so they would have to, you know, the only way it would get out of control is if the military, the police that are on duty do something that will incite. And so, I mean, you go back to the time of the civil rights movement when a lot of it, you know, the one side was the nonviolent side, and no matter what, you know, people had to go to class. No matter what they do to you, you cannot strike back. You cannot do anything back. Now, that would be a hard pill to swallow today. That'd be a hard pill to sit and have them say, no matter what the police officer does to you, and no matter what anybody does to you, because you know there are going to be agitators placed in the midst. That's just what we do over here. We place agitators in the midst of peaceful demonstrations to create a disturbance to then distract away from the peaceful part of the protest and make it be something else.
To get your hand out of my pocket type dude.
To get your hand out of my pocket, for sure. For mm-hmm. sure, you know, and so I wouldn't doubt that some of that is somewhere somebody is beginning to make that connection. Hey, we've got to make these people look a certain way. Listen to the language that they're using. You have Eric Cantor, the second highest ranking member of the Republican Party, calling these people a mob. What kind of, you know, when you hear the word mob, what comes to mind?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so look at, you know, so, you know, they're painting the language for these people to be disorderly and for to act like they're out of control and they don't know what they want. They know exactly what they want. They want Wall Street to get off some of that money.
Right.
However they do it, at the end of the day, that's what they want. We're not going to tell you how to do it, Wall Street. You know you're sitting on too much money for us to be out, for this many people not to have a job. Where you have the money, because we bailed you out. So we know you have the money, and we know you're making record profit. So why don't we have jobs? And that's really what it's down to. At the end of the day, they just want some jobs. And so the best scenario that could happen is that Wall Street listens. But what you have now is Wall Street mocking and standing up on the ledge drinking champagne and looking at the people, you know, from the windows of the floors. You know, what kind of nonsense is that? You know, and want to, you know, make it be like the people, something's wrong with them, as opposed to something's wrong with how Wall Street has conducted itself. So on the happy end, you know, the best case scenario, you would want Wall Street to make some changes, or for the federal government to come in and make Wall Street make some changes. At the end of the day, I don't really care who starts the ball to rolling. The ball just needs to start rolling. And it needs to start rolling in the lane of creating jobs and getting,
you know,
people back to work.
You know, what I really dislike about the whole scenario is the fact that Wall Street was in a situation, the American taxpayers and their money and our tax dollars bailed them out. So essentially we gave them the money. They, in turn, paid their CEOs these nice bonuses and then kept the rest of the money. And then
mm-hmm.
point the finger to us because now we're occupying Wall Street just saying, hey, no, this is not fair. And so, but they're, you know, like you said, on the balcony drinking champagne, pointing the finger at us, laughing, mocking us, and things of that nature, when the reality is that they got the money from us. They really have
right.
our money. It's not like they have their own. They have our money. They gave up the rights to all of those things when they took those bailout dollars.
And it I just agree with that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just saying it was just interesting to me how they can sit up there and act in such a manner when they really have our money.
For sure. And I think it took people a while to realize, wait a minute, that we helped Wall Street get out of the mess and stop the, you know, things from spiraling completely out of control, and we have not received anything on the back end of that. Well, it's unfortunate that it took us this long to realize that, because it was this way last November when, you know, some people stayed home and didn't go vote in some of their primaries, and then some people switched parties and voted for somebody else. And so now here we sit trying to figure out how do we get it back when we had it and we gave it away.
Right.
You
right.
know, so, we just gave it away by either not participating or voting against our own best interest. And so that's, you know, so on the one hand, you look at it and you say, yeah, Wall Street, you owe us because we bailed you out.
Right.
And yet you have yet to bail us out. And that's a problem.
Exactly. We're going to take another break, and when we return, we're going to shift the conversation to a little bit more about politics. We're going to talk about the GOP and what's going on with the GOP. Ron Paul wins this new straw poll. But this is the same Ron Paul that talks about legalizing marijuana, talking about why killing Osama bin Laden. But yet and still, he wins the moral values straw poll. Interesting. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskGema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, Ron Paul, I want to talk a little bit about the GOP. My favorite party, the Grand Old Party. Now, of course, as I said earlier, Rick Perry, who has won all of the debates up until now. Then you have Herman Cain, who is starting to gain a little ground. And then you have Mitt Romney that's kind of sitting on the balance and has really showed probably the best performance and has the most experience, but people just seem not to like him. What's the elephant in the room? Well, the elephant in the room is basically, in my opinion, that they don't agree with his religion. And that's starting to show a lot more as we get closer and closer and he continues to kind of gain more ground. But this week, the man who says the federal government has no authority to regulate recreational drugs, we're talking about marijuana. We're talking about it. You know, no big deal. We know what he said. No authority to regulate prostitution and no authority to regulate same-sex marriage. He also criticized Ron Paul, that is, the targeted killing of Osama bin Laden and Anwar al-Awlaki. Ron Paul. But yet and still, he wins the GOP's straw poll for values at the Values Voter Summit. Jima, what happened here?
Well, I think the people, those people that attend those straw polls are trying to send a message to their quote-unquote leaders that we have the power to get rid of all of y'all. So you all better take a real hard look at what our demands are, and you better get in line. That's what I see. And so that's why you have Eric Cantor say things such as the president's jobs bill is dead on arrival, and yet in the same breath say the president needs to work with us on the jobs bill. He'll say the same thing in 2.5 seconds. So those people that are out there at these different conferences and wherever they're doing these straw polls, I think they're sending a message to the GOP, the establishment, as they call them, that, you know, we're not happy with the candidates. And if you all don't do something, we're going to nominate our own, and nobody's going to be happy.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I like what the president is doing. I like what President Obama is doing now and has done over the last 6 weeks. And here's what I mean. For three consecutive years, he's reached out his hand. He's went over to the other side. He's leaned to the right. He's tried to meet with them. He's tried compromise. He gave them tax cuts. He gave them pretty much everything that a Republican could potentially ask for. They would come out and say, yes, we got 99% of what we wanted in this last thing. And so, but now, it seems to me like the president is saying, enough is enough. I'm not hearing it no more. I gave you everything you want for the last 3 years. You refused to work with me. I'm putting on the table my job plan. Try to take it down if you can. I'm going to go to every state and tell everybody I come in contact with that this is my jobs plan. I'm trying to turn the economy around, but the GOP is refusing to work with me. I like this. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And I just find it also interesting that to back up for 1 second, I find it interesting now that people are winning the straw polls that some call the fringe or, not real, candidates, those are the people that's wearing the straw polls. Now all of a sudden the straw polls don't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in years past, one would, bank, they money on if you came in first, second, or third at one of these straw polls, that you was probably going to be the eventual nominee. Now all of a sudden that Herman Cain and Ron Paul are winning straw polls, now they don't mean as much.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that to be very interesting. It's just amazing to me how they do that. But I am glad that the president, and even for the last month, he's been on focus, he's been on target, he's been on message. He has not wavered to tell them to pass this bill. Some say he shouldn't have given them a deadline. Well, he's given them a deadline in the past, and sometimes they follow suit, and sometimes they don't. The good thing about it is that he's told them, if you got something better, then bring it to me.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be talking about the same old thing that we've been talking about. You got something better, or you want to add to this, or you see another way of getting to these numbers, then we can talk. But trying to come the same old way, no, we're not doing that anymore. And people are having a hard time with that. But when you're in a position of leadership and you know you've done all that you can to extend and be open and be, conciliatory and all the things that he's been with this group in Congress right now, and they have consistently rebuffed him, made him look bad, disrespected him, you can only take so much of that. And eventually your back is going to say, I'm done bending.
Right.
Your back is going to tell you that it's hurting.
Right.
You know, you can only bend over for so long before your back. Nobody else has to tell you you've been down there too long. Your back is going to tell you you've been down there too long because it's going to start hurting. And so nobody else had to tell him you've been down there too long. His back told him you didn't bend all the way over for these people. And they still disrespect you. They still don't speak out when things are said against you that are unfair and that are untrue. They do not like you, as I think it was Joe Madison that said it was the debt ceiling debate that the president finally realized that these people just don't like me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're not going to do anything worth doing. So I'm just going to step on out and do what I know I got to do.
So do you think that because of what the president has finally decided to do by saying that enough is enough and by going out on the campaign trail. In fact, he was in Texas last week, and I missed him, you know, barely missed him, but he was here last week. Would have liked it. I couldn't get it on my schedule. But for the most part, I would like to know if what's going to happen with now the Congressional Black Caucus or the rest of the Democratic Party. Are they going to finally stamp up and support this president? Because they haven't done it up until this point.
No, they're not going to step up and support the president. What they're going to do is they're going to do enough to save face, is what they're going to do. Because, you still have, you know, and let me preface why I say that, not just the Congressional Black Caucus, but you have the Congressional Black Caucus, you have the Progressive Democrats, I don't know who they are, but that caucus as well, and then you have these Blue Dog Democrats. That's too many groups of people that he has to fight with in his own party because they're all carrying the label of Democrat.
Right,
so he
got
to navigate through those waters with these people who are supposed to all be in his same party. And then you have the senators from Louisiana, Mary Landrieu, who don't want to increase the taxes on oil companies. Why? Because she's a direct beneficiary of that tax break. So, you know, so she don't want to vote on anything. Or she's not going to support it. And these are the same group of Democrats that was this way during the health care debate. So he is in such a precarious position right now that he has to come out hard and strong against everybody. It's like, you know, don't take it personal, but I've tried to work with you, and I've tried to work with you, and I've met some of your demands. Now this is it. Either you're going to come on board and do what your people are asking you to do, because we know what's going on in California. We know what's going on in Louisiana. We know what's going on here in Texas. We know what's going on in all these states across the country that are having financial problems, that are having people's unemployment are, you know, national averages at 9.1. You have some states whose averages are, you know, at 10 and 12%. So we know that they need to do something to help the president, but it can't be about helping him. They're going to have to look at it. You need to help your constituents or you won't be there. And see, that's what I talk about power. We've got to recognize just because Senator Landrieu she's not going to run again anyway from here, Hutchison or Cornyn have been there for 20 years, that don't mean they need to stay there for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Especially if we're not seeing any change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm in total agreement with a columnist, radio person that says that Warren Valentine says that he believes senators and House of Representatives people should have a term limit. I'm in total agreement with that.
Mm-hmm.
The highest office in the land only gets 2 terms, and yet he's expected to do all the work.
Right.
And these people can be here for 20 years and 30 years, and some of them there longer than some of us been alive, and yet you go back to their home districts, and they're just as poor, they're just as downtrodden as ever, and they live in high off the hog in D.C. That's a disconnect to me.
Mm-hmm. So let's get back to Ron Paul for a second. So Ron Paul wins this straw poll, and the Values Voter Summit, out of all the things he's been very explicit about, his values, and the fact that Herman Cain took second place, right? And so
right.
What does this say about Ron Paul and his momentum and Herman Cain? Are they now going to become the front runners?
No, because you remember Ron Paul took third in the Iowa straw poll, and they completely, you know, ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he had to, you know, go out and make it be known that, hey, I came in third, you know, somebody can talk about me. So Ron Paul is not their prime media-like candidate, and he can be somewhat extreme on some issues.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't win. See, they're trying to find a candidate that they will rally around, that they know they can get people to come out and vote for come next November, and they haven't found that one yet because all of them have a lot of
skeletons in
their
closet.
Thing. Yeah, they got some bones dangling. They got some bones dangling, and they ain't all in the closet no more. Some of my house, and we can
right.
see them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and it's now that we're able to see them that they like, oh, okay. I mean, you think about Michelle Bachmann and how she was the darling of the party, you know, just 3 months ago. And now you barely hear anything from them.
Is
because
it true?
She's a lunatic.
Without question.
And some of her rhetoric, you know, is counterproductive to what the message is they're trying to get out. And
mm-hmm.
I don't believe that the entire Republican Party is like the Tea Party. I don't believe that. I believe there are still some sane Republicans out there that are not, you know, we just differ on some policies, but, you know, some of them I think are still sane and not all the way to the extreme. So they wouldn't vote for Michelle Bachmann. They wouldn't vote for Ron Paul. They would not vote before they vote for one of those because they just don't carry their interest.
Okay, so what about Herman Cain then? I mean, now he was kind of hanging around, just hanging around in the balance. And historically, when you look at these type of elections, you have these front runners coming out of the box, and then all of a sudden, those people that were hanging around in second, third, and fourth, they slowly gain momentum. Herman Cain we've been talking about him for the last 3 weeks. He's starting to gain a lot of momentum. He wins the Florida straw poll. He comes out with this 999 plan that everybody loves. Then he comes out and this week was on every talk show that TV had. Now, can he win?
Okay, now let me help you.
Mm-hmm.
you're giving Herman Cain a whole lot of credit. Now I will give him credit for making the best of his moment. He has definitely capitalized his moment in the light. And what happens, though,
Hold on. Wait a minute. Didn't he meet with Donald Trump?
Yeah, after he met with Donald Trump, then he comes out and says, oh, the N-word don't bother him that much.
Oh, okay. Okay. Go ahead. And what were you saying?
Okay.
Go help me out.
Now, my point is that Herman Cain has been on everybody's show trying to explain what he said on the last show. So he starts out, you know, the week last week with the whole blacks are brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to go on two or three shows to talk about blacks being brainwashed because I believe that happened on a Friday. So last Sunday he did all the talk shows on Sunday to talk about it. And then by Tuesday he had made some other comment. And then by Thursday he had another comment he was trying to make up. So he is making the best of his time. But I have to give him, you know, he was on The View this week, and, you know, where he made the statement that being gay is a choice, and until you prove to me the scientific evidence, you know, that's just what I believe. Now, if you show me, now I found that was interesting that, A, it is a Republican that actually believes in scientific evidence, so that was encouraging to hear. And then number two, that he said, if you could prove it to me, I would entertain changing my thoughts on that. I thought that was interesting. So every now and then he says something that makes him seem normal, but then he goes on the other side and says some crazy stuff.
Well, a lot of people are starting to get on the Herman Cain train. Now, I'm not there. I still think Rick Perry is going to win like he's been winning all summer. And I think that he's probably going to get the nomination. You know, every now and then it takes a good beating to understand where you are and to retool. and to get back into the game. I think the debate was, we got a debate coming up Tuesday, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, make sure you clear my calendar. I don't want any interruption while I'm watching my debate. The GOB debate. So
I really don't think it's gonna be Rick Perry. It's gonna be Rick Perry because I think there's just gonna be too many questions that he's not gonna be able to answer and he's not gonna want to answer. So I really don't see how he lasts. You know, I am shocked that I won the prediction that Newt Gingrich would still be in past the summer.
True.
You predicted he would be gone by now.
That's
and
right.
He's been hanging around on the peripheral.
He's not saying a whole lot. He's virtually out of the race, by the way. I mean, so, okay. Well, that's semantics. Is he in or not? But, yeah, go ahead.
He's at all the debates, so mm-hmm, some mm-hmm. kind of way he's polling high enough to be invited to the debates.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's interesting.
Okay, so who wins the debate this week?
I don't know. Where is it at? Who's hosting it? You have any information?
I don't have all the. I can find them out. I can get my producer to find out. Just hold on a minute. I'll get that information. But who you in the meantime? Who do you think is going to win?
Who do I think is going to win?
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be. Who do I think will win this time's debate? Well, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say you're 1, 2, and 3, depending on the crowd, would probably be Mitt Romney, Herman Cain, and I'm gonna say Rick Perry. I think Rick Perry will come out striking because he has to if he wants to survive.
Yeah, I just got a word that the debate will be 8 o'clock Eastern Time on October the 11th on Bloomberg Television, and the location is going to be at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire, and the sponsor is Bloomberg, The Washington Post, and WBIN TV.
Hmm.
So given that information, who do you say 1, 2, and 3?
I still say my 1, 2, and 3 would be Mitt Romney. It'll be Herman Cain and Rick Perry.
Okay, so who do you think has won the debates all summer?
It's been a toss-up. I don't think there's been one clear winner all summer. I think the back and forth that Rick Perry and Mitt Romney did this last time, or no, the time before was unnecessary. You didn't really get to hear from the other people. It was like it was the Rick and Mick show. So I didn't really I didn't really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this last go round, Perry showed his areas of development as it relates to debating because he was not prepared. He did not come in ready. I don't think you'll see that again because he's too proud of a person not to be prepared. And then his wife was on TV talking about he will be prepared. So I'm pretty sure he's had to take this one a little serious, more serious than he had in the past. So, you know, I think it's been a toss-up. I think when he came in with a lot of thunder, so he won the first one he was in. I think when Tim Pawlenty was in and him and Michelle Bachman was going back and forth, you know, I think that was a good little tandem, and I think maybe she came out looking okay for that one. So I haven't seen a clear winner. I mean, Mitt Romney is always there in the top three, but he should be because he's been running for president now for 20 years, it seems like. So he knows the flow of how to go and all of these debates and things. So he's the most seasoned as it relates to debates and how they're structured. So, you know, he should come out on top because he's been doing it longer than anybody else.
This is true. This is true. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Okay, Jim, let's do this for a second. Now, let's say hypothetically that we have a three-way tie going into January, going into Iowa, because, you know, they moved their primary up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they moved it up to January 3rd, right? So which means that basically over the next few weeks, it's going to be tough. They're going to all move to Iowa for the next couple of weeks, and they're going to be on the ground running. You're going to see Iowa this, Iowa that, and, of course, Florida moves theirs up. So they're going to be getting a lot of attention over the next 90 days, right? They're going to be really courting these states. So at the end of the day, they have a nominee, and they're ready to go. How do you think that person is going to fare against the president come election time for 2012?
Well, the benefit that the president has is that he will not be talking about theory. He will be talking about practice,
mm-hmm.
what he's done already. So that in itself will give him a leg up, in my opinion. The second thing is I think the president is a skilled debater. A lot of people don't get his rhythm because it's not a rushed rhythm, and that feeds into our psyche of quick, quick, fast, fast, hurry up right now. But he's a thinker, and so he's not just going to come off and say something all crazy just to get either an applause or to get a reaction. And so because of that, you really have to have some fat. And this is a smart man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the president is smart. And there's not a lot happening. Either one of these candidates will be able to go toe-to-toe with him on. And, yes, everybody keeps talking about the economy, and it's going to be all about jobs, and it's going to be about whether or not, you know, the economy is somewhat turned around, on its way of turning around, would be whether or not the president gets reelected. I disagree with that. You know, that's the message that they want to put out there, because that's what media does. I disagree with the fact that, you know, I reject the notion that the president is in trouble. I reject that notion because so much. And it saddens me that the media in charge of informing us of policies and procedures has done such a piss of telling the American how Congress, you know, there's a lot of people that really don't have a clue as to how, and that's why they're so frustrated. And they're
right.
frustrated at the wrong. And so, but the media painted such a picture that gave everybody the that this is all on the president. That's now people waiting, rising, wait. These 430 people, they got some culpability in this. They got some responsibility. They need to be for something as well. And I think people are beginning to. So I don't see necessarily. I mean, people talk about they want a businessman and. Because of the economy and how things are going, they want somebody that's ran a business before or whatever to get the economy back. Well, let's take a look at these business people. It's business people why we invest in. So
true.
Why would you want somebody who is, you know, who comes from that world to lead the United States when it's because of them we in the mess that we're in? That just doesn't make sense. But that's not the message that you hear on television. You know, so I just hope, you know, people do their own research and do their own studying. But, you know, I would say a good debate, the best debate would be between him and Mitt Romney. The most comical debate would be between him and Herman Cain. The scariest debate, the scariest one would be between him and Rick Perry.
Why do you say the scariest one?
Because I think it would take a lot of restraint on both of their parts not to say what they really want to say to the other.
So what do you think? What do you think come out of that? You know, there'd be
a whole lot
of biting the tongue.
You know,
a whole lot of biting the tongue.
Yeah, it'd be a whole lot of talking around. The question, and you remember last time, I want to say it was one of the debates with him and John McCain, where the pundits were saying how John McCain was not even talking to the president.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't give him eye contact, or there was some of that going on. You had that same situation, because to look at them, they would tell you everything that their mouths could not say. And you know how Bill O'Reilly is excellent for pulling out the expert on what body language means?
Right.
I would love to hear that expert opinion on what their body language would be saying to each other in a debate.
Yeah. So why Herman Cain would be the funniest?
Really? I have to say that. I mean, I feel like Michael Vick. Really? I have to tell you what, that would be the funniest. Because Herman Cain, for whatever reason, has this, you know how you meet somebody and they think they're better than you just because of what they have?
Nah, I haven't run into anybody like that, but go ahead.
Yeah, probably. Well, never mind. So there are people out there that because they are of a certain status or a certain whatever, that they're better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And Herman Cain can be very condescending when he talks. And it would just be pure comedy to see him get checked by the president.
Yeah.
They could put that one on pay-per-view. I would pay to see that one because he has a certain and could nobody claim we could completely take race out of it and it would just be two men having a conversation from their experiences and their background, and he would not be able to say some of the stuff he's been saying and getting away with it.
Yeah.
Not to the president. That's what I would love to see.
Well, I stated earlier that I believe that the president will run unopposed. I don't believe that there's a viable candidate out there that could beat the president. I don't even think there's anyone out there that really want to run against the president. That's why you see all of the flip-flopping with the voters, with the people, you know, a straw poll winning here, and Mitt Romney can't get over 25%, and they keep asking for other people to get in the race. And so it's just so much shakeup going on in the GOP because the president is in a superior position. He's really for the people, and I think people are finally getting that, the fact that he's not for big business. He's not, you know, just a politician. He's really for the people. If you look at his policies, he's really been putting together legislation that is really for the people. And so now people are saying, yeah, this is our guy. So I believe that it's because of that, we could potentially see a Herman Cain. Because Herman Cain has nothing to lose by losing. Mitt Romney has everything to lose by losing. You know, and all of these other viable candidates that could potentially be the president in 2016 or be good candidates in 2016, you can't keep getting into these races and keep losing and people going to see you as a winner. It's just not going to happen. You know, people will stop on you once you – this is America. They like winners, right? And so Herman Cain has the notoriety. He's out there pushing his book. His book sales will go up. I mean, you know, the fact that he's talking like he's in the White House in his book, which is comedy in itself. And so, you know, it would not surprise me at all if he was to get the nomination and we end up seeing him go out against President Obama. And now, what would be interesting is the voters turn out. That would be interesting.
Well, and there's a lot of people, you know, obviously that Herman Cain is resonating with. I'm not one of them. I don't trust him as far as I could see him because I think he's, I really would like to know how he made all his money. You know, I'm curious about that. And nobody's brought that out yet. Everybody's going to keep talking about, you know, he was the CEO at Godfather's Pizza, but I want to know how you got to there. You know, what happened to get you to that point? And maybe I'm not supposed to know, but we know everything about everybody else. So, you know, Herman Cain should not be an exception to that. And I think, you know, the cynical side of my brain says that if the GOP gets behind Herman Cain, then it could, you know, the goal there would be to dismiss the notion that, you know, they don't really care about black people or that they don't like black people or something along those lines, because then they can always point back and say, well, look, we did have a black candidate one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could be their quote-unquote, lack of a better word, Trump card that they could put out. And so, you know, that's the cynical side of my brain. So to be able to use Herman excuse me, Herman Cain as their trump card in terms of how they view themselves as it relates to race relations.
Yeah, the only thing that I really am starting to really pay attention to is the fact that they're trying to change the rules for voters, right? They got two pieces of legislation that are happening across the nation, and one is really about the voter's ID, and then the two is about redistricting these different segments of the state, which means that if you change the voting rules, you're going to have the people that were eligible to vote or had access to vote. You're not going to have that demographic voting now. And the fact, if you change the delegation of a particular how the states divide out its number of votes, then you also have a situation where it can where the president can really be challenged. It won't be by the popular vote, but because this is electoral politics, then it could potentially shake things up a little bit.
And don't you find it odd that these states are all governed by Republican governors that are making these changes to how things are done? These things have been this way for forever, and now that there is a man of color in the White House, now all of a sudden we need to have this massive voter ID legislation from more than half of the states in the country that are, and most of those, and all of those states are ran by, are governed by a Republican governor. That's just very odd to me. And it should, you know, cause us to pause and take a look at what's happening. And even if it's not happening in your state, and I put this out to, you know, my friends on Facebook, if you live in one of these 39 states, you might want to make sure your everything, all your stuff is in order, because it may not be. And I was just having a conversation with my sister, and with my family being in Kansas, which is one of the states that has changed some of their voter ID legislation, and my sister didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, then you might want to go check to make sure you are still covered, because I was telling her about the 96-year-old woman in Tennessee who they wouldn't give a voter ID card because she didn't have her marriage license. She had every other piece of documentation, but she didn't have a marriage license, and she'd been voting for forever, and they denied her. And so when you have those sorts of things happening across the country to the most disenfranchised already, then it's strategic. It's not accident that these 39 states are all governed by Republican governors, that most of them just got in office. That's not by accident. That was somebody's master plan the moment the president won the election in November of 2008.
Yeah. I hate to say it, but I have to agree with you. That's why it's incumbent upon us to continue to do this show, to continue to get the word out about what's really happening, and because we're not getting it on our regular media shows. And it's unfortunate that there's not a lot of people talking about these issues that really affect our lives and can potentially affect the outcome of what we do over the next decade and what our children would be succumbing to. So it's very important that we continue to do this. You know, we have to get the word out there. We have to sift through the information that's being presented. We have to tell our story. And that's why I'm so glad that your friend and your colleague, I ain't like to say your colleague, but someone that you tweet to most often, Al Sharpton, he has his show, because I believe that he's doing that as well. He's trying to get the message out to a broad audience from a different political viewpoint, which hasn't been done before.
Right, right. And that's been taken for granted as well, in terms of how people view us. And now they have to have more than one person on TV to address an issue that's quote-unquote related to the black community, because they now realize we don't all think alike.
Exactly.
So it's refreshing to turn on a channel and you're not looking at the same person who's always on there talking about issues related to black America. It's refreshing to see that, you know. And that's how it should be, because there's no other group of people that gets marginalized like we do. It's just no other group.
Not to mention that there's no other group of people that gets their news from other sources, get taught by other people, and are being lended to by other people than ourselves. I mean, we don't own a lot of banks. We don't have a lot of real estate. When I'm talking about geographically across the world, our media sources are also consumed by us from, but not made by us. And then the fact that you have teaching our kids now, and so the information that's been poured into us. Really, we have to really take a stand and begin to get our point of view because we do have a different point of view. We're not a monolithic people. We do have a different point of view because of our background, the things that we grew up around, you know, our religious views, our culture, our background. I mean, what we eat, you know, what we read, what we like, what we dislike, we have a different point of view. That's not a bad thing. It's not saying that we have to be put in a category, but we are different. There's nothing wrong with being different in this world. I mean, we don't have that argument when it comes to Asian in their cultures and Mexican in their culture because they tend to do that. They have all the TV shows and radio shows and teaching each other and doing all the things for themselves. And so does it, you know, the Caucasian society. But when it comes to African Americans, we kind of pull back a little bit. We don't want to be a part. In a lot of cases, we're not coming together on a lot of these same issues. And I'm so glad to see. You know, Reverend Al Sharpton has his own show so he can begin to put out the information that is relevant to us. And because we can pretty much trust his viewpoint because we know he's been on the front line for many, many, many years. And so he's not just talking the talk, but he's also walking the walk. And so it's very important for him to continue to do that. And I applaud Reverend Al Sharpton for doing what he's doing. And I hope that we get other shows like that to be able to give a perspective on what we're doing.
Right, and I think one thing that Reverend Sharpton does is that he does open it up for other people to come on the show and give another perspective. It's not like he has people, everybody on there agrees with him, number one, and it's not even that a person of color on there agrees with him. And so I think that's what makes it a good show is that you really get to see a wide variety of people talk about something that with passion and with some intellect that still gets their point across. I just think it's refreshing.
I have to agree. So we're going to take a quick break, and then when we return, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Alabama. Now, of course, I am from Alabama, and I'm a diehard Roll Tide fan. You know, Roll Tide. And I'm sure once we beat LSU, we're going to be coming to Oklahoma and we're going to be, you know, we're going to have something to say. But what I can't seem to get my head wrapped around is what is going on with this Alabama's immigration law. If you haven't heard about it, stay tuned because you won't believe your ears. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Bay.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
need a new website, haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We also have a chat room open, and you can also contact me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. Okay. So I want to shift gears for a minute. I want to talk about what's happening in Alabama with this immigration law. Now, of course, the Fair and Balanced News show, Fox News, was reporting that the Obama administration asked an appeals court on Friday to block the enforcement of Alabama's strict immigration law, widely considered to be the toughest in the nation, arguing it invites discrimination against foreign-born citizens and legal immigrants and is at odds with the federal policy. Now, the Justice Department filed the challenge to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in Atlanta. It claimed Alabama's new law is highly likely to expose persons lawfully in the United States, including school children, to new difficulties in routine dealings. The overhaul allows authorities to question people suspected of being in the court illegally and hold them without bond. It also lets officials check the immigration status of students in public schools. A federal judge in Alabama upheld these two key aspects of the law, which have already taken effect. Those provisions that took effect are what helped make Alabama law stricter than similar laws passed in Arizona, Utah, Indiana, and Georgia. Other federal judges have blocked all parts of the laws in those states. Jima, what in the world is going on with these immigration laws?
Well, I think you have things. I think, you know, it went above and beyond what they were trying to do. It's had an adverse effect on families in terms of kids not showing up to school now because of fear of what's going to happen. You've had the first person that they arrested actually was here legally. So it just goes to show that it overreached itself. Now, I'm all for things in order, and that is a feeling that you know, we've become too the nation in terms of our empathy and who can come and who can stay and who's in to what. But that cannot be an argument that's made in a vacuum, be one made out of emotion. Because if you make it out of emotion and you make it in a vacuum, get what they had in Alabama. And did immigration become an issue for the state of Alabama? What coast Alabama on that you just got people running to get in there? it just seems kind of, you know, odd. And once again, though, people voted for it. So what was the messaging in Alabama that told those voters down there was right? Or maybe it didn't tell them that, and maybe people just didn't go out and vote last November, and this is what you got.
And I guess what's really bothering me is the fact that when Rick Perry, of course the winner of all the debates this summer, was talking about what the legislation that he passed in the state of Texas by allowing those immigrant school children to go to school and allowing those children to go to school. And it seems like the Republican Party, or at least the people in the audience, didn't like that at all. And so, of course, Alabama is a red state, And it seems like they're moving in that same direction that the people in the audience was when they was talking against Rick Perry. So what is this problem that people have with immigrants in our society in America? Not to mention that most of us here are immigrants.
Right. You know, right. That's just his history, I mean, in itself. The second part of that is that the fear in the media and how they have marketed immigrants is that it's the immigrant's fault that you don't have a job, because that immigrant can come in and get paid less than you will and demand less. So they've convinced, you know, a segment of people that it's the immigrant's fault that you got laid off. So let's just get rid of all the immigrants. Okay, let's make that argument. Let's say that, you know, that there's some legitimacy to that. Y'all still ain't hiring nobody. I still don't have a job. So if they took all the jobs and you've now subsequently, you know, told them if they show up, then, you know, they're going to be arrested or deported or whatever you're going to do with them. That company that hired them 20 has not now gone back and hired me. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't. It's flawed. The whole argument is flawed. And I think people have been fed. You know, people, the media, and those in charge of marketing know how to feed on fear, and know how to feed on prejudice. And that's really what it comes down to. It comes down to fear. It comes down to prejudice myth, and it comes down to feelings of entitlement.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we had, of course, we had the chat room open, and some people in here commenting, and one of the comments was that, so what are we saying, to feed and educate the world? And, of course, I responded with, we're already doing that. If you look at the medical schools and the engineering schools in our college system, you already see that it is filled with immigrants.
Right.
So I don't understand. I mean, so if you look at the lower spectrum, which most people are talking about when they're talking about stealing jobs and the fact that they're taking jobs at lower pages, lower wages. But if you look at the other end of the spectrum, when you look at doctors, you look at, if you go to any hospital today, you very seldom see a lot of American doctors. If you go to any mostly engineering firms, you're starting to see less and less Americans, native born Americans, in engineering school. So we are already in that situation. So what's the problem with our immigrant system? I mean, why is it that people don't want them here?
Well, because they think that they're taking something away from them. That's it. I mean, there's nothing. There's, in my opinion, I don't see any other reason why there's such a twist in people's minds and opinions that people that are here that may have. I'm not talking about people that are born here, but they're, you know, people that may have come here illegally, and that they are all of a sudden the reason why you don't have something that you think you're entitled to have. That's just not true. You know, that there's just a flaw in that argument, and some people will not let that go. I'm not saying you go out and feed the world. However, we throw away more food than any of us will ever eat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go to restaurants, and you see the amount of food that is thrown away out of a restaurant on a daily basis could feed the children that we now know 1 in 3 go hungry every day. But we throw that much food away. So, you know, so we're not taking nothing away off of your table to go feed this immigrant child. You throw away more food.
Mm-hmm.
So for the argument about, well, they eating up, you know, we got to feed them and clothe them and do all this stuff. Well, we in the United States of America right now, 1 in 4 live in poverty. Period.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the freest, supposed to be the richest country in the world. How is that possible?
Not to mention if we're talking about, you know, taking our jobs or filling our education system, it seems to me that, you know, we should have a different kind of posture when it comes to those issues. And here's what I simply mean. If I'm going to compete with somebody to for a job, I'm going to put forth my best foot. And I should be able to outdo that person that I'm against, right? So he shouldn't be taking my job when it comes to competition. And likewise, when it comes to the other spectrum, when I'm talking about education, I really don't see a lot of people applying for medical school. I don't see to be a physicist or to be an engineer. So, you know, I'm not real serious. I'm not real sure. I'm seeing the effort on both ends, as opposed to just the complaining component about taking jobs and they're the reason that we're not having jobs, or they're the reason that we're not in these particular institutions, as opposed to going out and trying to get them or trying to be a part of the situation, being a part of the solution. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And as you stated, you know, you have a lot of people in the medical field and different fields now that are not American. And for heaven forbid, you're talking about a specialist, you know, that has specializing in anything. Most of them are not, and that's because I really think it's because we as America just got greedy. And we want it right now. We don't want to work for nothing. You know, to go to school and law school and be, you know, engineers and to spend time, that takes time. You know, that's a 4, 6, 8, 9, 10 year commitment just to school. In our totality as a nation, we don't want to work that hard. Do that. We want it right now. And so because that's our mindset, We can't understand, you know, why we have to work so hard for something that somebody else is getting. Well, they're working hard for it, though. But that's not what we want to do.
Okay. So we also have another comment out of the chat room that says that I think people are upset because they feel they're lowering the pay scale. Now, what do you think about that? Now, there is some validity to that because, of course, we're in a society in the wealth of nations. Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, talks about capitalism, and it talks about the main driver of capitalism, of course, labor. And anytime you have cheap labor, you're gonna have a better situation for that business owner. So what do you think about that? That's an interesting comment.
Okay. This is the same group of people that also talk about lowering the minimum wage. If you're going to lower the minimum wage and you have this hard stance on immigration, who then gets the lower minimum wage? It won't be the immigrants because they're not here anymore. So you can't have it both ways. It's just not something you can have both ways. And I think when we're talking about, you know, everybody knows we're in a capitalist society, but what does that really mean to me? We say those words, capitalist and socialist, and we throw all these terms out, and the average person really don't even have a working definition of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But they think it's something negative because of how it's presented and how it's marketed to you on a day-to-day basis. But what does it mean that we are a capitalistic society? What does that mean?
Basically, when we're talking about capitalism, we're talking about the fact that it is a free market society, and there's this thing called the invisible hand, which Adam Smith talks about, where the government steps in right at the nick of time to make sure that we have the right balance of government intervention and the fact of free market. So this is a free market system based on labor, right, based on the producing goods and services, but more importantly, goods. And so in order for you to produce those goods, you need to have somebody, some labor to produce those goods. And so that's pretty much the whole concept of capitalism in a nutshell. And the concept of socialism is the fact that it's not a, you know, communism and socialism is not a matter of having not a free market, but the concept of socialism is really about providing for the masses. And when you provide for the masses, everybody gets a little something. And so when you hear these people talk about socialism, that this is the last thing in the world, we really already have a combination of that in our society today. You know, for example, when you go into the military, you know, you have this socialistic system where everybody gets health care, right? and it's not paid for by the soldiers when they're in combat, you know. So I mean, we have a combination of those today in our society. Okay, so there's another comment in the chat room that says, most labor pay scale has been stagnant for 20 years. But, you know, I have to agree with the person in the chat room here, but the fact of the matter is that doesn't have anything to do with immigrants. It has everything to do with businesses, and it has everything to do with the fact that they, over that same time span for that 20 years, their profits has gone up exponentially, where the labor force or the workforce has stayed stagnant. So although the labor pay scale has stayed stagnant, the owners and the business owner has grown exponentially. And that's why we have the largest wealth gap in our society than we've ever had in the history of the United States, as opposed to, of course, when we had slavery, when labor was free and they were making all the profits. So when you have immigrants in our society, I just don't see how that prohibits or it inhibits anything that we're doing in our society.
I agree. I haven't figured it out yet either. And, you know, we have to be careful, as you said, on some small scale. You know, the majority of us are immigrants, number one. So how do we make it okay for the children? You know, how do we make sure that kids can be educated? So you, as they stated here in Alabama, you have a school system that saw 2,000 kids just not come because of the fear, because their parents feared something could happen to them on their way to school or on their way home from school. You have fathers just afraid to go out to work now, and so they're, you know, wives passing out, and so now you have conflict in the home that wasn't there before. So probably even if that child did show up to school, he wouldn't be able to concentrate because of the fears that's resonating in him on his way home or what's going to be waiting or if mom and dad are even still going to be there. You know, get stopped at a traffic light or a traffic accident or something happens, who can she call to go pick up her children now? I mean, all of those things. And so when we talk the impact of such a piece of legislation, did they really consider the fallout? Did they really consider the children? How can we make it so that those that want to be here and have come in legally, how do they get the necessary citizenship? For those that came in illegally, how do they get the necessary citizenship? How long should they be allowed to stay? Before, I mean, those, to me, real bottom-line human questions. But what happens is we get caught on theory, and we leave out the people part of it, the human side of it. And that's the problem with everything that we're talking about, whether we're talking about immigration, whether we're talking about health care. I mean, you go back to the fact of doing that debate where the audience cheered when the man didn't have any insurance. The question was, well, would you let him die? And the audience cheered about that. That's the nation we've become. You go back to the question where they booed the gay soldier. You know, we're losing the humanness of what made us great as well. When we no longer care about the least of these, and we do what, as Herman Cain said, don't get mad because I'm successful. Go get a job. Really, Herman Cain, is really that simple for me to go get a job and unemployment in my community is almost 20-some percent? And you're going to tell me that I'm insignificant and I'm irrelevant because I'm trying to take a stand because I want what you have, but I can't get it because I've been fired, I've been terminated, I've been downsized. I'm working 3 jobs now. My children barely see me, but I'm irrelevant. I mean, we've lost the humanness of who we are.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I said last week during the show that there were, from this point until the election, there's going to be a lot of sideshows. There's going to be a lot of distracting news story to get us away from the real issue of our society today, which is jobs, right? What are the things that's going on right now in our society is really jobs-based. Because, you know, the fact that we're having so much problem with the debt is because we don't have tax revenue going into the government. Because of all those jobs that were shipped overseas, they are probably going to never come back. And so although we're trying to move in the direction of bringing the economy back and trying to have a stronger economy, the companies have made a decision to take those jobs overseas, and they're never going to change the decision because of capitalism, right? We talked about capitalism as being producing a product for the cheapest labor possible so you can make the highest profit possible. And so if you take that model that you have in a capitalist society, they're not going to bring those jobs back because it's not good for business. Okay, and then you look at this whole point of immigration. It's not the fact that it's the immigrants' fault. It's what's making the immigrants come over here. What's so popular to make them want? Because they know they can come over and get jobs that are going to be under. They're going to be deals that are going to be cut, right? They're going to be under the radar. They're going to be getting paid in cash, and then so the businesses are winning again. So it's a win-win situation for the businesses. And for the immigrants, and you have the middle Americans trying to say, no, we don't want you over here because you're taking a job, but they're not performing those jobs because they're not high wage paying jobs. So so that's why this becomes a sideshow. This is another distraction, and that's why I want to make sure people really follow these things closely because it is just another distraction. What do you think?
I agree. It's a huge distraction, and that's. You know, you were talking about it earlier as far as the president's message and staying on point. He hasn't gone off message in the last month. It's all about jobs. It's all about getting people back to work. He's not even talking about balancing the budget. He's talking about jobs. And so that's what's important because he knows if you get people back to work, then people will then be able, as you stated, go out, spend more money in taxes, do things such as generate, you know, some things happening. And so... on a small scale, all of these candidates in and out of GOP primary is a distraction.
Yes.
You know, I mean, really, you know, the press conferences for 30 minutes to say run when that's what you've been saying all along. Really? You know, that was unnecessary. And then the message, you know, with Sarah Palin running, but, you know, you still want to be on and have something relevant to say. All that's a distraction. The whole process is a distraction, and now you have the people really trying to bring focus to what it is we're fighting for in terms of jobs and Wall Street being held accountable. You want to, you know, discount them as being irrelevant, insignificant. And then in reality, that's, we should all be out there protesting something. I'm sure
yeah.
We all have a protest in us about something. You've been done wrong on some level, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, and that's why I'm glad to see the Occupy Wall Street movement starting to get a little bit more momentum because you're right. That's one of the reasons where there is no single message because they've all been done wrong on so many different issues and so many different levels that they can all have their own protest individually and still be able to meet the mark. So I want to shift gears a little bit. This last segment, and this is also about jobs, as we've been talking about for the last few minutes here. But these are jobs that you wouldn't normally expect to be around because it happens, you know, for since 1949 every year. And that is the NBA. The jobs that will be lost if the NBA doesn't have a season could be a devastating blow. Right? Now, Jima, I like your article that you posted on Current Events blog this week. And if you want to go out there and see that blog, it's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE, D as in Delta, E as in Echo, TalkRadio.blogspot.com. You have an article out there called about the NBA season. Now, this is what you said. You said that I predict that there will not be an NBA season. This will definitely be a hard pill to swallow, but what can we do? I just hope that when this is all done, the NBA is a much more stable company. Now, a meeting between the NBA Players Association and the league's owner was broached, then canceled over the owner's demand that any session include an agreement on a 50-50 revenue split. Now, the union asked the owners to meet before Monday's league-imposed deadline for canceling the first 2 weeks of the season. But according to the sources, the owners wanted the players to agree to a 50-50 split. Zima, what's going to happen to the NBA season this year?
It's not going to happen. I mean, you know, I was just I saw something earlier today. They were talking with Dwayne Wade, and they were talking with LeBron James about, you know their stance on what they've taken. And it's at a point now, there's supposed to be a meeting tonight to try to get to that 50-50. The players are like, we're not doing it. You know, and they went on to say, you know, they know that, you know, this is the part of the business that the fans don't understand, but this is, you know, this is my job, and I got to go in and fight for my rights. And that's fair. You know, we sometimes forget, because it's multi-millions of dollars, that it's still their job and their livelihood. And if your boss was to come to you and say something to you about your salary and how they was going to cut it, you would probably go to your union and try to fight it as well. And so we've got to respect the fact that they're fighting, because there's so many times, you know, some people take things lying down because they feel like they have to. And they've, you know, taken a stance and said, no, you know, this is going to hurt because, you know, we love what we do, but we won't be pushed over. You won't, you know, discount us and try to mistreat us and disrespect us based on the amount of money we are generating for your company.
But what do you say about when the fans say they're already making millions of dollars? You know, why make a million more?
Well, let me ask you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
If you had an opportunity to make more money based on what you generate your company, you know, right now you generate quadruple the amount of what you're getting paid.
This is true.
Why can you not get a bigger share of how much you're making for them? Why do they get to make all the profit off of your knowledge, your hard work, your blood, sweat, and tears? You know, the sacrifices that you make when you have to travel, you know, leaving your family, the injuries you may sustain, you know, the discomfort of another hotel, and, you know, all of that stuff that goes into how you perform your job on a daily basis, and yet you're getting paid not even a half of the pie of what they're making off of you. So, you know, if you had the ability and the opportunity to fight for more, wouldn't you do it?
Well, see, the component, the problem here is the fact that you're talking about the owners versus the labor people, right? And so no matter how the NBA looks at, you know, no matter how much the players think they get paid, they're still just labor for a business entity. And so that's the reality, right? And so because the businesses have to pay for brick and mortar, they have to have the liability insurance that goes on, the amount of the taxes that are imposed on the businesses, all the other things that happen that a business owner that is liable for and responsible for and accountable for, they have some right to keep a portion of that money. Not to mention they're in business to make a profit, right? And so there has to be a thin line between how much I pay you because you work for me, you're labor, and the fact that I'm a business owner and I should be able to keep the fruit of my loins, right? So
I understand that. But it was the owners. See, if you go, they created this monster when they started giving out those big multi-trillion-dollar contracts. Because, whoever was the first one to get one, they the ones that created this. So now they got to deal with what they created. They created this monster. You know, I'm not sure, you know, what all they do that make it worth that much money, but somebody somewhere thought it was a great idea. So that's what they did. They started paying them $1 million, 5-year contract worth $150 million, you know, franchise player. I mean, like you have in the NFL, you're a franchise player, so you get extra this. Now, let's not play like that. Even though they have bottom line things they have to take care of, they still making money hand over fist off of these players. I'm not gonna let them get off the hook that easy. But on the flip side of that, I hear what you're saying. You know, as a business owner, I am entitled to make money because that's what I'm in business for. I get that. I do. But let's not, you know, it has to be a more fair, equitable way of doing business. And my only problem with it is that all we talk about, and that's why I've been intent during this whole process when we were talking about the NFL and the NBA, is that we're forgetting the peripheral people that would be out of jobs. We're forgetting the concession people who are not making the millions of dollars. You know, we're forgetting the parking lot people who will stand out there in the cold and the rain to park vehicles. You know, we're forgetting all of those people whose livelihoods have been based on things happening at the stadiums. And so if there's nothing happening at the stadiums, it's not just the multi-million dollar athlete, because hopefully they invested some money and they're going to be okay. But, you know, the peanut man and the popcorn man, I don't know. So we're already talking about a recession. We're already talking about we're at 9% unemployment. What is going to happen when these arenas and start not, you know, when they don't renew the contract with their vendors? And then their vendors have to start laying their people off because they don't have that kind of work anymore. Where do the numbers go? So, it has a greater impact on just that player and just that owner. It has an impact on the peripheral, those people that are on the outside, and that was their livelihood.
So what do you think? If they truly do not have an NBA season, who is it going to have the most impact on? The owners or the players?
Well, the problem is that I think, unfortunately, unlike the NFL, the NBA players get a better rap than the NFL players do. So this is going to have an adverse effect on the players, because all we see is the million-dollar contract people. We don't see the minimum league person.
Right.
You know
right,
what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
We don't see the minimum league that I think he only making maybe $150,000, $200,000. I shouldn't say only, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, in comparison to the $10.5 million person. So all we see is the jersey people. We see the Carmelo Anthony, the Dwayne Wade, the LeBron James, the Kevin Garnett, the Kobe Bryant. That's who we see. We forget that third guard that sit down at the end of the bench that's just happy he in the NBA. Because, see, you got several of them already right now working at the furniture store. Delonte West is working at the furniture store. Because he said he had to have a job doing something, which means either he didn't take good care of his money or he never had a lot to begin with.
Right.
So, you know, we forget about that. And so I think the players in the NBA are getting a lot tougher than the players in the NFL would have gotten it. But, I think because they can't say a lot, you know, and when they do talk, they have to be real scripted in what they say, that they, you know, they've got to get ahead of it, or some spokesperson needs to come out and give us their side. Because to us, it's just all about money, and we're like, really, everybody making a whole bunch of money. So it can't just be about money. I think it has some, they're dealing with some issues around fairness and dealing with some issues around equity and, you know, and still maintain the line, like you say, but I'm the team owner. I own the team. So
that's
I'm supposed
right.
to make more money than you, which is true. I have, you know, that's a true statement.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's definitely something we have to watch in the weeks to come, because it should be preseason, should be kicking it off right about now, and it looks like they canceled all the preseason games. And so it'll be real interesting to see how things unfold in the days and weeks to come. Well, that is our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. And, of course, we have Papa Bear in the chat room today, as well as other guests out there in the chat room and all of my Twitter followers tuning in. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time. And I would also like to thank my co-host and my executive producer, Jima, and go out to her blog at askjima.blogspot.com. She's also the main writer for TaylorMade Talk Radio. blogspot.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer and Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.